5QHK.
The Night Pops podcast is intended for you, but not your children. My dad and Matt say bad words in this episode, which isn't good for kids like me to hear. Listener discretion is advised.
13 Sergeant 1 at Central.
In that case, I am rolling.
I too am rolling.
You know, we haven't done a slate in a hot minute. Let me get you on speaker and we can slate this bitch. That's not how you slate.
The Reno 911 episode, aka Q Lazarus. 3, 2, 1.
That's how you slate. Okay.
He's good slate. He's sufficient.
What was the other thing I snuck out to? Oh, I managed to see Spider-Man Far From Home. Or No Way Home. Spider-Man not going home anymore. The Into the Spider-Verse that's not animated. That was fun. I enjoyed that. Somehow it managed to sidestep the problem that we have in so many superhero sequels where there was just so many villains. Still didn't feel overstuffed. I got exactly as much of every villain as I wanted.
I liked it. I was pleased by it. Did not anger me. I went to The Cursed.
I know nothing about that, outside of the poster, basically.
This is a fairly good little piece of just kind of like a Hammer horror.
Oh.
Like a little bit like Robert Eggers, but something happened.
We're going to have to confront that on the show someday, our feelings for the films of Robert Eggers.
No, see, the bird represents a bunch of shit that I could have put on the screen. I'll catch hell for it. I don't care. I'll do the time.
At the beginning of the episode, we do this.
Is there anyone on the air?
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I am vote. Beyond recall.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Now, there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
Men drilling by night, underground meeting places, pagan rituals. Well, anything's possible.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks Podcast. We are a podcast that is cinema-centric. We like to talk about movies, and we like to represent ourselves as existing in a fictive diner where we have coffee and discuss the films with you right at the table as a guest that we neither acknowledge nor hear. But you can find the Nighthawks Podcast wherever most wanted podcasts are served. You can also catch us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podomatic, Audible, Amazon, many, many others. You can also find us patrolling the information superhighway at nighthawkspodcast.com. Matt, how have you been?
All right, you know, okay, I guess.
I think as far as the RSS feed goes, we've only been away for about 2 weeks, but we recorded that Matrix episode a bit ago, and we ran into just a mountain of production problems with it, which sometimes happens. You got to roll with the punches, but we've gotten a lot of good feedback on it, so there's that. But otherwise, we're still just kind of here weathering the beginning of a massive war in Europe. Still trying to cope with the global pandemic.
I wouldn't say a massive war, Bob.
Not yet. Not yet. But we're not here to talk about that. That is a very serious issue, something that needs to be talked about, something that we all should be informed about. But we're just not a particularly important platform. So for me to come up here and say that Vladimir Putin is a dickhead, it means nothing. It means nothing to you guys. We're not the political podcast. We're the movie podcast. Make a movie about Putin being a dickhead, then we'll talk about it. But for right now, I think we'll leave that discussion to some better platforms, but we'll include a few helpful links in our show notes to just kind of the situation going on in Russia and the Ukraine. That's kind of a comedy buzzkill because it is so serious. It is so dour. It's upsetting. It's not fun. But also, guys, there are some times where you need to remember to laugh. And sometimes you need to remember it to laugh at some of the other fucked up shit that's going on in our world. And that's kind of our movie tonight. I lobbied really hard for this one. Matt, thank you for finally kind of giving, and because this is not typically our fare. I've noticed that when it comes to just comedies, you and I, we love a good comedy. We love us to laugh. But as far as discussing them beyond just quoting the lines back and forth to each other, we don't get really good conversations out of them.
What was your review? It made me giggle. Oh, it made me giggle too.
I liked the part where the man was funny, and I liked the part where the lady then told the man, and then the lady, and then I liked the part, and, you know, that's basically what it devolves to. I think we have something to talk about with this one, though. As fripperous as it might appear on the surface, there's a lot of meat to discuss with this movie. Specifically, I'm talking about, Matt, and I say this without asterisk or irony, this was one of my favorite movies last year, and I think it's just because it hit at a time when I really needed it. It was exactly what I needed. It made me laugh out loud several times, and watching it for the show tonight, just in the brief span that it's been out, this is like my fourth go-through, and I was still laughing. So this is one I really enjoy, one that we're bringing to you. And full disclosure, I have already also reviewed this film for the One of Us Network. Matt and I contribute over there sometimes, and I was on the review for this film when it came out.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone, because everyone loves something. Podcast posts daily with subscriptions, you get video content as well. All are welcome, because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.
If our listeners are keeping up with our One of Us feed, I'm going to try not to double up here. I think there's a lot to talk about here, and I don't necessarily need to retread ground I've already covered. But it's also worth mentioning that after we recorded that episode, and before we have recorded this episode here, some of the folks at oneofus.net have actually been in touch with some of the folks at Reno 911, and just based on the conversations we had, sent us some swag. It's not a payoff. I'm still being very honest with you, but that is something I think I wanted to disclose. No, I'm going to take that back. That's not something I wanted to disclose for ethical purposes. That's something I wanted to brag about because it's hella cool.
I was going to say, nah, you just want people to know.
But we are talking about the second film from Reno 911. That is Reno 911, The Hunt for QAnon, which as of this record is streaming on Paramount Plus. Probably one of my like I said, it's one of my favorite movies of last year. It's probably one of my favorite Paramount Plus offerings that I've been privy to over the past year. So yeah, this is just a real fun one for me. 19 years ago, a team of really skilled comedians set about lampooning what was then a broadcast and cable television staple, and that's following cops around with cameras for cheap reality TV fodder. Reno 911 as a comedy television show premiered in 2003 on Comedy Central and ran until 2009.
Next, Reno 911, when the sheriff dies.
Asian fever playing card?
I'll take ghost.
Okay-doke.
Reno's finest almost killed.
I called the jet ski.
Each other.
I just pulled my gun out. Now everybody is over.
Reno 911,
Friday at 1 a.m. Eastern on Superstation WGN.
That original series inspired a feature film.
We have been invited to the American Police Convention in Miami Beach.
On February 23rd, 8 cops will give every law enforcement officer a bad rap. All the action, all the romance.
Need some assistance, man?
And all the adventure that could fit on the big screen.
We gotta clear this beach. 1, 2, 3.
Reno 911 Miami.
We got officers now. Get a wet nap, people.
Rated R. February 23rd, only in theaters.
It also, I guess, spun off two TV series. Not really spun off. I guess they were two reboot seasons. One on the short-lived, short-form streaming service Quibi, and a brand new season just dropped. As of this record, it dropped today on the Roku network, or the Roku channel, I guess is the correct way of saying that. This also spawned, obviously, the second feature film, which was just released last December. And that movie is what we're going to be discussing tonight.
Good morning, gang. Apparently this Q, or QAnon, whatever that is, has been saying defamatory things. We need to put this in the hand and serve Q.
They're having a convention on a boat. Leaving from Panama, Florida to Nassau.
Yes! Yes! We go one, we go on!
We're going undercover.
I am Captain Bonsoir Fils.
Hello!
Before you wonder, yes, I have been acquitted. All good. Everything is good now.
Great.
Fan out reconnaissance.
Nice meeting you, Coco.
So nice to meet y'all, too. A beautiful QAnon couple.
You should see him with his pants off.
You know, Q is a question, a query, and a quest.
Here's what I'm thinking. Clemmy could get next to that little weirdo.
I did it to become Miss Teen Whiskey Pete's, and I can do it now.
So you guys know who Q is?
It's a weird question. Let me ask you something. You guys cops?
Go, 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 go.
Welcome to Jeffrey Epstein's Island.
Heroes. Forged. Fire.
Someone has to get this bomb safely out to sea.
Not yet.
Obviously, I was going to do it while I'm volunteer. Why would I step in and say that dramatically? I'll do it.
Reno 911, the hunt for QAnon.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus Sign.
Is it bad that I feel like I'm being threatened with a good time?
Have you ever figured out what a Quibi was?
Quibi was a project, I think it was Jeffrey Katzenberg, and it was his streaming service. And the big revolutionary idea there was that all their content was, I think, 8 to 10 minutes long, something like that. And the advertising is like, oh, you got 10 minutes before the bus? Pop on an episode of whatever. And like, they came out with a full slate. And I think Reno 911 specifically was very well tailored to that format. It is kind of a sketch show working on a theme. And so, yeah, you can do that for 10 minutes and still feel like you've told a story. You can feel like you've told a couple of stories. However, there were like crime dramas, police procedurals, and serious projects that had 10-minute episodes. Now, I have not partaken of any of them. Quibi missed me. The idea of 10-minute television missed me. But I will say the closest I came to considering to sign up for like a free trial or whatever was the Reno 911 season. When they announced they were doing that, I'm like, that might be worth picking up Quibi for a month to see what they do with that. But I never did, and it folded fairly quickly.
And it was like a preposterous amount of money was flushed down the Quibi hole. The Quibliette.
It was the segue of TV streaming services.
The Quibliette, Trevor. It's a portmanteau of oubliette and Quibi.
You know, the more I think about that, the more I like it.
I'm trying to think of like when I became aware of Reno 911.
I'm an old fan of the show, but I'd be hard-pressed to tell you if I sat down and watched like the series premiere. But I know I watched it early and watched it often. And I'd even say by the time it was off the air, I was a fairly big fan.
I just remember that having worked in television, just the dead skewering of the vanities of the people involved, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's what always got me about it. And the complete ridiculousness of some of the characters who are supposed to be. The theme of Reno 911, if you haven't picked it up through context clues, is what if cops, but in Reno, Nevada? Not even just the real Reno, Nevada, but like an enhanced, like fantasy, extra sucky version of Reno. Reno, if it was more like Sparks.
I was wondering if you were going to get a kick out of some of the, like, they throw some jabs at a few Nevada communities throughout the course of this movie, and you've traveled Nevada extensively.
Yeah, and like Sparks can eat it. It's a horrible little pit.
Just for the sake of numbers, 2003 to 2009, that was 6 seasons on Comedy Central. Those seasons ran about 13 to 16 episodes each, depending on which season you're talking about. The Reno 911 Miami movie, a theatrically released feature film, that was released in 2007, so right in the middle of all that. It was a moderate box office success, and I'm pulling that entirely from Wikipedia. I don't do box office because it involves me doing maths, and I'm not going to call down that particular thunder. It is worth saying, however, apparently according to a book by Robert Ben Grant and Thomas Lennon, who are kind of two of the major figures in Reno 911. There was a sequel discussed but did not proceed because of insufficient box office. So I think it probably made money back, but not enough money to interest people in a sequel. It has a 36% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I'm not... I don't think that's fair. I enjoyed Reno 911 Miami immensely.
If they put that out in theaters and people went to it not knowing what it was and not having any... Like, if you just walked into it like, I don't know, let's see what this cop movie is. You know? you'd probably want a refund, you know?
Well, and I think something that works for QAnon is... I missed the Quibi season entirely up until very recently. I watched it this week. It has now moved to the Roku channel. I had not seen that. So seeing The Hunt for QAnon for the first time was my first taste of the Reno 911 Sheriff's Department in a long time. And it was a very welcome taste. And so I think I gravitated towards that. In the theater, I distinctly remember seeing Reno 911 Miami with a couple of friends of mine, Anonymous William, who we've discussed on the show before, and my buddy Chris Giese. Literally, we were on a plane back from South by Southwest, landed in Denver, drove to Casper, had another day off, and said, well, do you guys want to hang out? What do you want to do? Well, let's go see a movie. Hot on the heels of this film festival where we each saw like 20, 30 movies. And so that was the movie we went to, and we thought it was superb. We thought it was a great way to close out kind of our fun weekend. I have to admit, I didn't think about it since because I had a whole two or three seasons of Reno 911 after that to kind of gravitate towards. And so in my memory, it just kind of fits in as a long episode. And then this one just feels special because to me, it was my first time back and it had that working for it. But I think as far as the content of Reno 911 Miami, I think it did a great job of taking this television show and making a big, quote unquote, big budget Hollywood movie out of it. You know, we had a walkthrough cameo by The Rock, pretty fantastic stunts and explosions and situations. But I think what this property does really well throughout its run is it manages to grow, it manages to mature, but it also knows who brought it to the dance. They know the bits that work. We have had literally 19 years of Jim Dangle's bicycle getting fucked with, and it's still funny. You know, don't mess with what's not broken.
There were a couple things missing here that I think maybe were updated for the times a bit, so to speak.
Just rounding out our numbers here, Reno 911, which is sometimes labeled as Reno 911 Part 2, also sometimes labeled Season 7, that's the Quibi season. Those episodes ran between 5 and 10 minutes. There was 25 of those in total. And then the season that dropped today is 11 full-length episodes on the Roku channel. The Hunt for QAnon takes place right in that grand Reno 911 universe timeline in between the close of the Quibi season and the beginning of the new full season on Roku. So that's where we're at, I guess. How far back, what is your earliest Reno 911 memory that you can conjure right now?
I'm trying to think here. I don't know.
Well, this was right in lane for us. It like this came out at the perfect time. 2003, I was in my early 20s. I had just started drinking legally, started going to parties that I wasn't going to get busted at. This was a good time to be joking and smoking and watching TV. There was a lot of just sit around buddy watches of Reno 911 because it does kind of function like a sketch show. You're just going from vignette to vignette to vignette and watching these cops be really awful at their jobs.
Well, yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it is a sketch show. You know, it's a sketch show. The denizens of Reno are sketch characters played by the same people playing the cops.
Right.
Which is why some combinations of the people never appear on screen at the same time.
And some of them do, to great mystery.
Anyway, it's hard to explain without doing the bits in a tacky way, but this nicely skewered the notion of Reno itself.
Some of the names that you're going to see popping up over the course of the season, and a lot of them have followed this property through every incarnation it's been on. You've got your core list of 10 major cast members, and Reno 911 didn't have a rotating cast, as it just kind of had a fluctuating cast. Sometimes some members weren't there, sometimes they were. We have Thomas Lennon, We've got Wendy McClendon Covey. We've got Niecy Nash, Robert Ben Grant, who was also a director on this film, director on the other film as well. Cedric Yarbrough, Kerry Kenny Silver, Carlos Al-Zarqawi, who I have literally grown up with, Mary Birdsong, Ian Roberts, one of the founding members of Upright Citizens Brigade, John Lo Truglio. You also have just frequently recurring bit parts. You've got Patton Oswalt, you got Michael Ian Black, David Wayne, Ken Marino, Toby Huss, Nick Swardson, Jack Plotnick, Kyle Dunnigan, Andrew Daly. The recent seasons even include special guest appearances by Weird Al Yankovic as Ted Nugent. And so it's just, it's always been kind of a cavalcade of really talented people. And for that, I was really glad to get this back. I think we should probably run down a quick pre-spoiler curtain synopsis, folks. We're going to be deploying the Nighthawks spoiler curtain on this episode. Not everybody got a chance to see this when it was when it came out on Paramount Plus. And I think we're kind of stumping for it now that it doesn't quite have that premiere fire behind it. No, this is not one. Guys, if you missed it when it came out, don't sleep on it. Go out and check this out. This is just a breath of silly fun comedy. In this movie, the Reno Sheriff's Department, which is legally differentiated from the Reno Police Department and the Washoe County Sheriff's Office, is dealing with the crushing reality of being a cop in a post-2020 world. They're heavily drugged. They're facing criticism from every angle. Most of the core cast is back, and they are tasked with serving process paperwork to the enigmatic political extremist figure and sower of misinformation known as Q.
What does Trudy Wiggle say? The white one
wakes me up. Blue calms me down. Orange keeps the demons from dancing all around. And then this blue one is so I don't get bloating and gas and then I don't shit my pants.
How do I get me some of that?
So discovering that Q may or may not be attending a booze cruise on an ocean liner, nine of Reno's finest go under deep cover on the booze cruise to unmask the entity known as Q and serve them with paperwork pertaining to a lawsuit filed by a Reno pizza restaurant. So Matt, overall, how did this leave you? No spoilers.
Honestly, it left me like kind of, it was a pretty good place. It kind of had, if I had a criticism, I would say that it sort of felt like an overstuffed episode of the show. You could definitely tell it was like filmed in the pandemic, you know, limited extras, limited set size, some stuff like that going on. But, you know, that's not a huge deal. That's not, it doesn't really affect the, you know, it's Muppets. They're puppets. How big do you want the stage to be? You know, it is what it is.
Right. I really love this. Like I said, this is one of my favorite movie experiences of last year. I did not get a chance to contribute to the One of Us kind of year in review video that just came out. We can put a link to that in our show notes. But had I had the chance to participate in that, this would have been one of the movies that I sent up and talked about as being one of the great ones of last year. It's not Citizen Kane, folks. It's not a highbrow art film, but it is a really good comedy. It is a really good satire. It skewers a lot of what's going on in the world without using it as a crutch. I will say, I think Wendy McClendon Covey and Patton Oswalt steal this movie to the point where they can take it home, hang it in their respective rooms on pedestals with a label that says property of Wendy McClendon Covey and Patton Oswalt under it. Like, they signed, sealed, and delivered. I think this is kind of their movie.
Yeah, they're definitely, they have this little weird, hard to explain romantic subplot that is just precious. Just precious, you know?
And like I said, I think they managed to somehow strike a perfect balance of new stuff to show you that the property has grown as a franchise, but they're still able to evoke some of the elements that really carried this show through several years. Like you, I think I missed some of the recurring guest stars, and John Lo Truglio was absent as well. But I'm going to admit, the movie is pretty full right now. I think to go any further probably would have been a mistake. And, you know, it's a matter of who can you get? Who's free that weekend? We came to find out later that a lot of this was shot pretty piecemeal. And I think that's... That's how the show seemed to have been produced as well.
You could sort of tell that they cobbled it together, and it's like set on a cruise ship by and large, and you could tell like they shot a little bit on a ship and then the rest of it's in probably some kind of factory or power plant or something.
I actually have an answer for that, Matt. I have an answer for that. We'll get to that in a minute.
But there's some genuinely funny stuff here. One of my favorite gags is that because the QAnon cruise is such a grift, they're out of all the good liquor and beer, and they only have two flavors of clum, like it's not named as such, but the Clamato Bud Light.
Welcome! I am so happy for you to be here. I'm a fun guy, but we do have some bad news.
Oh,
unfortunately, we are dangerously low on beer.
Oh.
What? We currently have two types of beer left.
Okay.
It is a Clamnado hot beer.
Mm.
Okay, it is very hot.
Okay.
And we also have a Clam Light Lime beer.
What if you're allergic to clams?
Good question. Let's move on.
It's just very deadpan humor, and I appreciate that a lot. The idea that it alludes to some real events that you don't need to know a whole lot about to enjoy the film, as long as you know that QAnoners are very faintly right wing, at least, and like it's very dry. Like the whole pizza parlor thing was a real thing, where this pizza parlor supposedly had a meeting place underneath it where there were satanic gatherings and like there's
child
no basement
sex trafficking. Yeah,
I wasn't gonna go that dark, but
that's what they were accused of. I think that's what I liked about this. I mentioned it earlier, but the satired politics, they're definitely sent up as being absurd. They are here for satirical purposes. But the movie doesn't lean on it. If you know who QAnon is as an entity in the real world, if you know what Pizzagate is, if you know what the January 6th insurrection is, you're going to get a lot from this movie. Now, if you don't know what those are, if you're just really unplugged, or maybe you're revisiting one of the best films of 2021 through a historical lens from a few decades in the future, you'll still have a lot of laughs with this. I actually had concerns kind of going into it. Like I said, I didn't watch the Quibi season, so this is my first time back after several years away. I was worried that a comedy centered on inept cops who shoot unarmed people, that might not be funny for me anymore. Especially my life and career at the point when this came out was as a crime reporter for a news outlet. You know, my head has to spend some time in some pretty dark places throughout the course of the day. I don't necessarily love it as part of my entertainment package anymore. But the movie manages to subvert a lot of that by taking the inept cops off the streets and putting them into this totally unreal process-serving situation where they still get to be inept cops, but they get to avoid a lot of thorny politics. That said, having subsequently watched the Quibi season, they're not trying to shy away from the politics either. Some of the topics of the day are absolutely up for lampoon in the series, including police violence, racism, political correctness, identity. It's all here. So they're not being shy either, but maybe the movie was the better package to do something a little more general, I guess. I think they even mention at one point that the QAnon weirdos actually ended up being pretty nice people, most of them.
Hey, everybody. I'm Alan Barber.
And I'm Kirk Klinger.
And we are the hosts of a podcast called You've Never Heard This.
You've never heard this?
You've never heard this. It's been brought to our attention by the wonderful hosts of the Nighthawks podcast that we use the word new in our promo that they so graciously play on every episode.
And we are not new, Alan.
We are not new. We are no spring chickens.
We're not.
We've been doing this a while.
We've been around. Doesn't mean we know what we're doing.
No, not at all. But we certainly like to pretend.
We try.
If you love music, then yes, you'll love this podcast. It's like a book club, except you don't have to do the homework.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you will join us talking about everything from Soundgarden to Billie Eilish to the Dresden Dolls to Korn.
Little of everything, really.
Little bit of everything.
We have fun.
We have fun. We have a good time. So we hope that you will join us. Enjoy our podcast. We can be found on just about every platform you can think of. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, most recently Amazon Music and Audible.
Nice.
You have no excuse to not find us.
Yes. So you've never heard us.
Every Tuesday.
So check out
the podcast.
You've never
never heard this. Enjoy.
Hey, this is TC.
And this is Jim from the Studio Demands It podcast,
where every episode we take a demand from a hypothetical studio,
which could be you,
and challenge ourselves to conceptualize, pitch, and craft a film based on the stipulations
or the demands
we are given. We talk about movies all the time. Particularly, we complain about the choices made in the films we've seen.
We're nerds like that.
And, of course, like any good nerd does, we automatically assume we could do better.
Even with the demands and restrictions that clearly must have been put on by a production.
So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com and listen to our previous library of episodes. Damn it. Our library of previous episodes. Our precious library, Jim. Our library of precious episodes.
You're a pirate, Smeagol.
Okay. So head on over to StudioDemandsIt.com to listen to our library of episodes.
And submit your demand for a future episode, too.
So go do that.
Okay, bye.
Okay, end of ad.
Do you think this holds up as a property 19 years later? Like...
I think their timing's still impeccable. Like I said, there's a few of the sketch characters maybe haven't aged so great, but they're not in this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fine. I think particularly the Dangle is sort of an outmoded mode of humor, right?
Right.
Like he's a homosexual caricature. Let's just come out and spit it out of our mouths, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've managed to keep it sort of defanged over the years by having it be like his eccentricities themselves being more of a focus. And like I love that his canonical age is 66 years.
Well, and what I will say in defense of that, though, I think back in 2003, the joke was that Dangle was a closeted homosexual, but wasn't very good about hiding it. And this was a time in politics where things like don't ask, don't tell were still very fresh on people's minds. You couldn't out yourself because it could get you fired. Unfortunately, there are still some situations all too prevalent in the real world where that's still the case. But I think they've grown. Like, Dangle at this point is out and pretty proud. It's from that his ineptness still comes. He's showing up to a super conservative political conspiracy theory cruise wearing his American flag shirt, but it's a Pride American flag, and he's wearing a Pride headband and Pride arm warmers. It's great for him. It's very on brand for him, but he's not fitting in. You know, he's still very out there.
They were never gonna fit in, you know. That's they were doomed.
And this is all apocryphal, so take it for what it's worth. But this is basically based on it. In 1989, and a show that I found out today is in its 33rd season. It's the reality show Cops. That came about when a writer's strike was potentially about to sink the very new Fox television network. And it was before it really even got a foothold. So they found out that it was cheap and made for compelling television to just let a camera crew follow cops around and then put the results on television with no writing necessary. They can get around the writer's strike. The show was a smash success. It changed the face of television forever. It ushered in this whole new era of reality television. Meanwhile, the veterans of a sketch comedy series, The State, who had just gone on to produce another show called Viva Variety, once that wrapped up, they were asked to produce a pilot for a new series, and then that project was terminated a day before production began. So they put in a lot of time, I think about a year, in the writing and creation of this project, and then it was canceled right before shooting began. So they were basically told, take whatever money you didn't spend on that and see if you can get something else for us. The premise of the inept Reno Sheriff's Department was kind of conceived of as a wraparound for a sketch comedy show. But sources say that the pilot, when it was developed, it was determined that the cop stuff was actually pretty interesting and worth its own show, and thus Reno 911 was born. The pilot was developed for Fox, who ultimately passed on it, and it's said that the network got cold feet over some of the homosexual content regarding Lieutenant Dangle and him making out with another man. And so they passed on it. That allowed Comedy Central to pick it up a couple of years later. The cast and writer's room was populated with a lot of veteran cast members from the state, and going back even further, the Upright Citizen Brigade Improv Theater in L.A. Yeah, and we've got all
that. Good yet, Trevor?
What's that? Shut up. I did a lot of homework. I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, I know. I'm letting you go. Yeah, it holds up fine. It's still quite funny, and their despair as police is very funny to me.
I, as a fan of the show, this was like getting a visit from some of your older, rowdier buddies, which I hesitate to say because I just said that about Jackass forever. But this is really like seeing some old friends after spending some years apart, and it was comfortable. It's like slipping into an old shirt or something. The whole thing hinges on whether or not the cast has it, and they do. They do. There's no parsing that. Characters are spot on. Great comedic timing. If we get to a point where we can't do anything but send the Reno Sheriff's Department to space where they can have misadventures up there, bring it on. I think these performers know how to find humor in everything and did a particularly good job here. I mentioned this on the One of Us review as well. I think this is actually a good jumping on point, too, for like if you want to introduce somebody to some of the episodes, some of the earlier seasons that may have some of the jokes have not aged as well politically. This gives you a good taste of the characters. It gives you a good taste of what this is going to be, that it's really irreverent, that it's really politically incorrect, that the joke here is that these cops are really bad at their job, that the cops are racist, that the cops are sexist. And that is what's being lampooned. They are not aspirational characters. I think this movie sets that up beautifully. And as a matter of fact, I did exactly that. I showed Adrian Reno 911, The Hunt for QAnon. And now that's kind of our lunchtime watch as we go back and we'll watch a couple of episodes of the TV series.
But like, you think they still got it?
Oh, I absolutely do. They still got it. How about you? Do you think they still got it?
I think maybe they still do. Like, no, I mean, I just had the same old good time that I've always had watching it. You know, it's not something you should like apply a bunch of science to. Like, you shouldn't sit there and try to overthink this one. Just watch it. The main thing here is that one of the brilliant conceits of Reno 911 is that they are all just, none of them are really like high speed, low drag police. They're all there for the check, you know. That attitude is really shot through this one, where they leap at the chance to like have an offshore undercover assignment, you know? I liked going on in the background. You had a Steve Dyebeard Aggie and Brian Posehn as like two of QAnon kind of Sasquatch figures, just dry as a bone, one of the standout cameos in the film. And I liked the captain, like he was a hoot.
Yeah, that was Gary Anthony Williams, who it took me a long time to put these two roles together, but I got him. My first real exposure to him was as Stevie Carnarvon's father on Malcolm in the Middle, and a particularly fleshed out and really good role for him in that series. And he has undergone a pretty striking physical change. He's dropped a lot of weight. And it took me a minute to realize who he was. But there was just no mistaking that voice. And he is hysterical in this.
Yeah, I was certified cat shit crazy. Yeah. I think we should get that spoiler curtain down.
I put a pin in this earlier, and I want to go back to it. Like I said, after our review on the One of Us Network's screener squad of this movie, we actually, Robert Ben Grant, who is the director on this film, and he plays Deputy Travis Jr. in the overarching Reno 911 property, actually reached out and got a hold of us and addressed some of the things we've been talking about. He told us that they shot on the Queen Mary for 7 days, and then they do 2 days in Malibu, 2 days in the Valley. So the majority of it was on the Queen Mary. The Queen Mary is permanently docked in Long Beach and has fallen into some very heavy disrepair. Many of the scenes between Robert and Clemmy, Robert is Patton Oswalt's character, always improvised, according to him, and was done in one or two takes. And usually he says they used the first one. They had to cut two big scenes featuring Sergeant Declan. He's kind of weirdly become a straight man for the crew. Carlos Alzarcawi in this one is weirdly in the background. And Robert Ben Grant sent this, quote, Garcia, we didn't set out to make him so sparse, but we really couldn't service everyone. There's just too many of us, end quote. And I think that's a fair statement. The budget was tight. Robert Ben Grant says that they shot in 11 days. Below the line budget was about $6 million. So those are just some little factoids that were imparted from the director to the crew that did that review, and I'm passing them on to you. I thought it was kind of neat and important. But yeah, otherwise, Matt, I'm ready for the spoiler curtain if you are. I, to wrap things up, I really recommend this one. It is raunchy. The humor is blue. You're being asked to laugh at Carrie Kenny Silver wearing her awkward lingerie in public and lying naked in a buffet. That's all here. This is not highbrow comedy, but it is really skillful satire, and I enthusiastically recommend this one. Do you have any final thoughts, or do you want to hit the button?
No, for the love of God, let us hit the button.
We are post spoiler curtain, and this is where the meat is, Matt, because we didn't get to spoil anything on the One of Us record. I'm just going to come right out of the gate with it. How about that reveal on who is not only who is Q, but who is also kind of the overseer, the dragon for Q in this case? Cameo by a Speak and Spell and one RuPaul.
Yeah, I like the idea that essentially QAnon is a magic eight ball, because that's certainly consistent with the actual trash babble that came out of QAnon. I also like that there were constant veiled references to Ron, which is a real QAnon reference.
Brian Boy Saint, he showed up in Reno 911, I think, at least once, if not several times. And he was great in this, just that deadpan Brian Poisson kind of nasal delivery.
Who is currently planning a coup in Venezuela? Is it Obama, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, all of the above? Which is the best Chan? 4chan, 8chan, 69chan?
A friend of a friend of the podcast, we kind of know him 2 degrees through Nicholas Don Smith, who has opened for Poisson a few times.
Yeah, I believe that is the case. Unfortunately, I was not able to go to that show. Not that I'm bitter. But yeah, they together with, he's kind of partnered up with, say the poor gentleman's name. I believe you say it, Steve
Ag,
who is
Steve Ag,
most recently Dyebeard on Peacemaker. It's not his real name, but I can't say his real. What is it?
I have not partaken of Peacemaker, Matt. I apologize.
Fuck's wrong with you? Get on that. Then the sub-central conceit of this boat trip that they're on is that almost everybody is on the boat is undercover. So it's like over half of the people that we meet turn out to be some kind of FBI, CIA, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, like Julian Grant and Ricky Lindholm are like undercover journalists.
The girl that shot Nancy Pelosi's desk was working for Vice News. When she's checking their guns and she's just like throwing them into a shipping tub a few feet away.
I also really want to shout out Carrie Kenny Silver in this, who it's, I didn't want to bring it up in front of the spoiler curtain because it's just such a fantastic B story for this movie. And I think the scene in all of Reno 911 that just encapsulates Deputy Trudy Weigel for me, and I think this was even a cold open on one of the episodes, it's Weigel's birthday.
Surprise!
And the whole crew is gathered around and they have a bouquet of balloons, helium balloons, tied to a rifle that they're giving Deputy Weigel as a gift, a birthday gift. And it gets fumbled and the balloons kind of take the gun aloft and start blowing it through the parking lot. And Weigel starts chasing it and every...
Oh, she's gone. It's good. It'll be a fun day for her.
Yeah.
Happy birthday!
which is just like, that is so perfectly Weigel. But in this movie, she really gets a chance to shine. For one, we really step away from the non-objective camera in this. This is not reality show-based Reno 911. We're getting more cinematic with this. You will see the world through Trudy Weigel's eyes. And she happens to run out of medication immediately into the trip and is set upon by Rob Hubel as Xavier Rothschild III, a secret lover. And she's basically living this weird Titanic fantasy that's going on inside her head while the rest of the crew is trying to do their jobs. And it is just hysterical.
It's fairly telegraphed, but it's still funny to watch unfold. And it's just super cringe, but in a good way, you know. She's just losing her mind over that handsome plant.
And then, of course, to say nothing of Clemmy and Patton Oswalt's character, who just...
God, dude, when he was shitting with the door open.
Hope you don't mind that I didn't make the bed. I didn't want to try to hide the lie that I had been tossing and turning, thinking of you. Because I have been.
Wow, great. It smells so masculine in here.
Oh, well, that is the spicy cheese puffs. And if you're thirsty, the clam light lime.
Oh.
I would open one, but I'm the clam lime kind of, you know, it's like a rush hour deal right through me, so.
As someone who has had the clam light lime splatter shits before, believe me, shat my underwear right off one time.
Oh, sorry, but vocalization leads to visualization, leads to realization. We'll be right back in a second.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave the door open and talk to you from here.
Great.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that at all.
I was having trouble handling shit. I didn't even know what to do.
Probably should have done this in front of the spoiler curtain, but I was a little disappointed in the lack of Garcia in this, only because Carlos Alsakawi is somebody that, and this blows my mind every time I remember it, and I think I've known for a few years, but I found this all in my adult life, that Carlos Alsakawi, Deputy James Garcia in Reno 911, is the voice for Rocco in Rocco's Modern Life.
What, you're fucking with me?
No, not at all. Go check his credit. He's probably better known as a voice actor than he is for Reno 911.
I love the fact, too, that like when Patton just says, oh, it's me, I'm Q, which is a lie he's telling to get the sex, right? I love that they just roll out and don't check on it, you know? That's great.
Well, and that's the thing, you just cannot let go. That's what makes this work. And that's what I think saves it from a lot of criticism and a lot of, like, you know, people have talked about it. It's like, hey, can you really be a fan of Law and Order if you're not a fan of police, or if you're arguing for police reform? I think this gets around it because the cops here are just genuinely bad at their jobs.
You know, it's funny to me that nobody that loves police is pro taxes.
Well, and you'll also notice that nobody who is in the Blue Lives Matter crowd, they all hate the street cop that pulled him over that day. Like, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Another scene I want to bring up, God, the chase. They're not bird scooters by name. They're not like Lime bird scooters, but they are the kind of rent as you go scooters that are on the deck of the ship. And there is a low speed chase around the decks of the Queen Mary, which is a great way to shoehorn a Reno 911 car chase into a movie that takes place entirely on a boat.
Well, and what I love about that scene is it has every conceit of a car chase and several from like slapstick foot chases.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all done in like slow motion, like one quietly hip maneuvers another one. And then there's like a stage scene that they barge through, and one of them gets wiped out cataclysmically, and but it all happens in very slow motion, which is very funny to me.
I do love that Trudy wipes out almost instantly, and then just like, no, I'll run, I'll catch up.
That was a hoot. And then of course there's all the horrible shenanigans that go on with the crew.
Yeah.
who end up being a non-neutral party. Scenes where they like discuss mutiny and piracy, and at one point they put him out to sea in a raft. And, Oh, that's how they proceed toward the end. That's how we end up on the QAnon island, which is formerly the island of Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, from there it unravels because Patton Oswalt captures them and takes them to QAnon, and QAnon is RuPaul with a speak and spell.
Right.
That was, I believe, what was it, hit by lightning or doused in the seawater or something?
It was found floating in the sea after a tragic shipwreck.
Yeah, so it just gives essentially random gibberish, and they, what does it say? Like at one time it says Hillary has bears.
Oprah has bears.
Yeah, Oprah has bears. And they're like, we have to get this out on the chans as quick as we can.
And also, to say nothing of the amazing musical number that happens in this right at the beginning of the third act, where it starts off with Lieutenant Dangle on his banjo and evolves into this fantastic rendition of Caribbean Queen by Pink. Complete with song, dance. I think all of the cast members take at least a verse or a backup vocal, with the exception of Trudy, who is doing her own thing. But what a joy just to have in the middle of this absurd movie, just a really fantastically well-done, well-performed musical number. Well-directed, too.
Yeah, it's quite fun. It's a nice little pick-me-up in the middle when it was right when it was getting a little too ridiculous to pay attention to. I'm never really depressed by like a Bollywood number, you know?
Yeah.
Then there's a series of crosses, double crosses, and recrosses, and one imaginary plan followed by the execution of a real plan. Some truly ridiculous fight scenes where like there is an action-filled finale. Almost no lesson is learned.
No, it's Reno 911. It never is. But Q gets served.
Yeah, and I love that the stakes of the whole thing is to serve Q for a lawsuit too.
Yeah.
And so they're like, so when they're like, we have to hit the self-destruct button, they're like, do you? seems like a bit of an overreaction, to be honest. Yeah.
So Matt, final thoughts post spoiler curtain on Reno 911, The Hunt for QAnon.
So I would say like this is like in form. If you've seen Reno 911 and you know that you like it, there's no reason not to seek this out. I still think the hot beer was a hilarious joke throughout. Yeah, I liked it. I liked the amount of commentary it did because like it said what it said, but the deafness of it is that, like, the Reno 911 cast is not the Pod Save America crew. They don't have a lot of neoliberal high horse to stand on.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty trashy themselves. I liked some of the little, what do you know about Q? Well, I don't know who he is, but I know that he's handsome and he's white. Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, we assume that much.
Yeah. I do love the line they gave Junior at the beginning, though, kind of explaining how the Reno Sheriff's Department has been reacting in a world of, you know, defund the police and all cops are bastards. Like,
it's been a bad year for cops, man. Between the Antifa, Black Lives Matter guys that have been trying to defund us and the Blue Lives Matter crowd that actively tried to kill us, I should have been a fucking garbage man, like Dad said.
They cut to the obligatory police bullpen shot, you know?
Yeah.
That just Dangle's just doing a big old bong rip. Right out in the open, you know?
Just discuss, what have they got you on? Declan's like, LSD. Well, are you still thinking about hurting yourselves or others? Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah, the drug talk was pretty classy in this one.
Yeah, I liked it. Ultimately, Matt, this one was just so much fun. This was something I really enjoyed, and I kind of, the reason I wanted to give it a spotlight here is I think that's something people need a lot of right now. Now, granted, folks, it's not healthy to totally escape. There is a world going on right now. Some important shit is going down right now. It's important to engage with that and understand what's going on. But, you know, if you need a break, and this isn't a long movie either. I don't even think it's quite 90 minutes. So you can get this in the space where you could watch three episodes of Reno 911. It's all new content. It's all brand new, fresh. You've also got the Roku channel, a new season of that there. Be sure to check that out. And I'm going to say it, the Quibi season was fine. It was great. It was more of the same. I did catch myself going, oh, it's over already? Because the damn episode's only 5 minutes long. But other than that, if you just sit down and watch 5 or 6 of them in a row, it's a good binge of Reno 911 content. All of the Reno 911, all of the above, highly recommended. And I think that's about my final.
Yeah, I too had fun. I too recommend. I did miss any jokes pertaining to tacos.
I think that's one of the great things about Reno 911 is how portable it is. You don't need the full cast for everything. Okay, we've got the exterior of the Renaissance Fair, and we've got Patton Oswalt. So let's get the cast there, and we do one day of shooting, 10 hours, but then we're able to chop up that thing and use one segment per episode for 10 episodes. And it's just easily portable like that. So a lot of these folks have other things that are going on. Robert Ben Grant, Thomas Lennon, always got something in the hopper. You've got Niecy Nash had just got her own spinoff of another series on ABC. Wendy McLendon Covey she's got, I think they're wrapping up the Goldbergs this season, a long running sitcom there. So these folks are busy, and it's great that they're able to find just this really portable, easy to do. It's like, okay, we've got them for a day. Let's do this scene real quick. I think it serves well for that. It's a great long-running series that is honestly a sketch show with a theme. Yeah, you should check it out.
I'll always love it for just all the little TV jokes in it, like when they show a boom mic operator or something, you know.
All right, folks. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Nighthawks podcast. Be sure to check us out on the podcatcher of your choosing. Some of those can include Stitcher, Amazon, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podomatic. Just find us. And if you can't find us there, find us on our website, nighthawkspodcast.com. We are also on Instagram by searching for Nighthawks Podcast, and on Facebook. And we got some great content there. So be sure to find us. Reach out. Let us know how we're doing. And Matt, do you want to send us out?
Thanks for tuning in. And now you should go and get some pie because it's almost morning.
Nineteen years ago, a team of really skilled comedians set about lampooning what was then a broadcast and cable television staple. Mary Birdsong, Ian Roberts, one of the founding members of Upright Citizens Brigade, John Lo Truglio,
just like it's printed, man.
Yeah, I know. I even have it written there. But you also have just in like frequently recurring bit parts. Like you, I think I missed some of the recurring guest stars and John Lo Truglio. It's because I went into it so confident. Oh, you're eating a banana. That is both nutritious and sexy.
Yeah, not the way I do it. The way I do it, it's neither of those things.
I drizzle it in chocolate, and then I take a big bite out of the middle.